since the time when the study of sociology began, right away people would try to get a unified theory to try to describe all of sociological development, society development, cultural development, or so forth. So right away the question is what is your theory? And in sociology, various dominant theories have emerged that are unifying approaches to try to scientifically evaluate society. Socialization theory is dependent on some of these other larger theories. So you'll find in sociology a quest for theory. So we're going to ask that question today in this part one of sociology theories and ask first the question, so what is a theory? A theory is a proposed relationship between two concepts. In other words, a theory is an explanation for why or how a phenomenon occurs. What is your theory? Sociological theory is developed at multiple levels, ranging from grand theory to highly contextualized and specific micro-range theories. There are many middle-range theories and micro-range theories in sociology. But the fact is, as we think about this, everyone is a sociologist. I mean, we look at the world. Christians are social people. We have a Christian meta-narrative of creation. God's the creator. Humanity fell into sin. God has restored humanity through Jesus Christ. The Holy Spirit has been filled or has been poured out, and Christians are being filled with the Holy Spirit. And we have an explanation of sin. Sociology calls that deviance. We call it sin. We have an explanation for why language operates. It was a gift to image bearers. And again, this is not to say that our thinking is superior to that of the sociologist. They're seeing their world, and we're seeing our world. And we can learn greatly from the sociologist. But the fact is that everyone is a sociologist. Christian leaders are guided by a very social phenomenon called love, agape. 1 John 4, verse 20 says, if anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he is a liar. For anyone who does not love his brother who he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And he has given us this command, whoever loves God must also love his brother. Now, in a lot of ways, this is a core value of our sociology theory. It goes back to the fact that Christ died on a cross. God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him would have new life, would not perish. So in a sense, we take our faith and take it to the interchange of sociology. Now we have a meta-narrative, and every theory has a meta-narrative. So let's talk about the importance of theory. Without theories to explain the relationship between concepts, we would not be able to hypothesize cause and effect relationships in social life or outline processes whereby social events and patterns occur. And to propose cause and effect relationships and or outline processes in social experience are the major components of sociological theory. So again, we can see the importance. You know, God made creation, and God made reason, and God made rational minds. God made things like the scientific method. So these things applied to society can be extremely helpful. And we don't have to give up our Christian meta-narrative while we understand these contemporary theories and, in fact, can be helped by them. In fact, it's probably more useful and informative to view these theories as complementary. One theory may explain one element of society better than the other, or both may be useful for explaining social life. In short, all the theories are correct in the sense that they offer a compelling explanation for social phenomena. And again, there's an example of we have modern theories, postmodern theories, we have a Christian meta-narrative theory, and actually it's a beautiful time to be alive when you do sociology, because we have the general audience with science in the general audience trying to evaluate things, and we have Christianity with a incredible, positive, hopeful meta-narrative. Let's look at some of these major theories. The structural functionalism is one major theory. It draws from the inspiration primarily from the ideas of Emile Durkheim. Durkheim was concerned with the question of how societies maintain internal stability and survive over time. He sought to explain social cohesion and stability through the concept of solidarity. In more primitive societies, it was the mechanical solidarity. Everyone performed similar tasks that held society together. Durkheim proposed that such societies tend to be segmentary, being composed of equivalent parts that are held together by shared values, common symbols, or systems of exchange. In modern complex societies, members perform very different tasks, resulting in strong interdependence between individuals, based on the metaphor of an organism in which many parts function together to sustain the whole. Durkheim argued that modern complex societies are held together by organic solidarity. Then what happens is societies are seen as coherent, bounded, and fundamentally relational constructs that function like organisms, with their various parts, social institutions, working together to maintain and reproduce them. The various parts of society are assumed to work in an unconscious, quasi-automatic fashion toward the maintenance of the overall social equilibrium. All social and cultural phenomena are therefore seen as being functional in the sense of working together to achieve this state, and are effectively deemed to have a life of their own. So what is meant by a function? These components are then primarily analyzed in terms of the function they play. In other words, to understand a component of society, one can ask the question, what is the function of this institution? A function, in this sense, is a contribution made by a phenomenon to a larger system of which the phenomenon is a part of. Thus, one can ask of education, what is the function of education for society? So let's look at that. So in the late 19th century, higher education transitioned from a training center for clergy and the elite to a center for the conduct of science and the general education of the masses. As structural functionalism thinks about the elements of social life in relation to their present function and not their past functions, structural functionalism has a difficult time explaining why a function of some element of society might change or how such change occurs. However, structural functionalism could, in fact, offer explanation in this case when it comes to education. Also occurring in the 19th century, though began in the 18th, was the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution, facilitated by capitalism, was increasingly demanding technological advances to increase profit. Technological advances and advanced industry both required more educated workforces. Thus, one aspect of society change, the economy and production, it required a comparable change in the education system, bringing social life back to an equilibrium. Another philosophic problem with structural functional approach is the ontological argument that society does not have needs as a human being does. And even if society does have needs, they need not be met. The idea that society has needs like humans do is not a tenable position, because society is only alive in the sense that it is made up of living individuals. Thus, society cannot have wants or needs like humans do. What's more, just because society has elements in it at the present, that does not mean that it must necessarily have that elements. For instance, in the United Kingdom, religious service attendance has declined precipitously over the last 100 years. Today, less than 1 in 10 British attend religious service in a given week. Thus, while one might argue that religion has certain functions in British society, it's becoming apparent that it is not necessary for British society to function. Yet one could argue, and this is my comment, that British society is a mess right now. So, you know, all of these things in the structural functionalist, again, it assumed, you could feel the modernist, the evolution, like society is an organism, and that it is evolving, and there are various functions in that evolution of society. So the early sociologists were much more functionalists in this sense, where they would see manifest and latent functions, and they would, you know, operate in a world where you saw that early influence of some of these philosophies. So they would then talk about manifest and latent functions. And even modern structural functionalists talk about these things. Merton, in 1957, proposed a distinction between manifest and latent functions. Manifest functions are the intended function of a phenomena in a social system. Latent functions are the unintended functions of a phenomena in a social system. An example of manifest and latent function is education. And again, whenever the structural functionalists talk, education is one of their favorite examples. This manifest purpose of public education is to increase the knowledge and ability of its citizenry to prepare them to contribute in the workforce. A latent function of the public education system is the development of a hierarchy of the learned. The most learned are often the most affluent. Thus, while education's manifest function is to empower all individuals to contribute to the workforce and society, it also limits some people by creating boundaries of entry into occupations. So limiting some people by creating boundaries of entry into occupations. So again, we see here these manifest and latent functions and trying to see the world in one system. Well, another system that became popular in the 19th century was conflict theory. And this is really a Karl Marx theory, a prominent sociological theory that's often contrasted with structural functionalism is conflict theory. Karl Marx is considered the father of conflict theory. Conflict theory argues that society is not best understood as a complex system striving for equilibrium, but rather as a competition. Society is made up of individuals competing for limited resources, money, leisure, pleasure, sexual partners, etc. Broader social structures and organizations, religion, and government reflect a competition for resources and their inherent inequalities. Some people and organizations have more resources, power, and influence, and use these resources to maintain their position of power in society. So, in each of these theories, the conflict theory and the structuralism, there are going to be strengths and weaknesses in how it interprets reality. Conflict theory was developed in part to illustrate the limitations of structural functionalism. Okay, so here's structural functionalism is working. Education is educating the workers for the industrial age. And then Karl Marx sees that these people are getting educated, but there's very little that they're getting paid, and wealth is given to different individuals. So the structural functionalist approach argued that society tends toward equilibrium, focusing on stability at the expense of social change. This is contrasted with the conflict approach, which argues that society is constantly in conflict over resources. one of the primary contributions conflict theory presents over the structural functionalist approach is that it is ideally suited for explaining social change, a significant problem in the structural functional approach. So, here again, you see these primary assumptions of modern conflict theory. Competition over scarce resources is at the heart of all social relationships. Competition rather than consensus is characteristic of human relationships. Inequality in power and reward are built in all the social structures. Individuals and groups that benefit from any particular structure strive to see it maintained. Change occurs as a result of conflict between competing interests rather than through adaptation. And the adaptation, of course, would be the structural functionalist. Change is often abrupt, revolutionary, rather than evolutionary. So, what are the limits of conflict theory then? Well, not surprisingly, the primary limitations of social conflict perspective is that it overlooks the stability of societies. While societies are in a constant state of change, much of the change is minor. Many of the broader elements of society remain remarkably stable over time, indicating that structural functionalist perspective has a great deal of merit. As noted earlier, sociological theory is often complementary. This is particularly true of structural functionalism and social conflict theories. Structural functionalism focuses on equilibrium and solidarity. Conflict theory focuses on change and conflict. Keep in mind that neither is better than the other. When combined, the two approaches offer a broader and more comprehensive view of society. And again, I mean, this is how it often works in evaluation of society. You see the two main theories here in put side by side, and there are positives on the one. It seems to explain things better, like in the world of education. And then in the case of social change, the conflict theory seems to have a better meta-narrative. And so here's two. Now, in the next presentation, we're going to talk about another one. But all of these things are part of what sociologists understand as sociological method. So from a Christian perspective, we listen and we see this all, but in the back of our mind, we still have our Christian meta-narrative that can be factored in even as we utilize the tools of other theories. So, you know, in a lot of ways, this part of the class, and don't get frustrated if it seems so like heady and very difficult to follow. As we get through this class, you're going to see how these theories come out in more practical ways. And you'll also see how the Christian meta-narrative follows all of these theories and all of the subjects that sociology gets into.